Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Candid, where we have real talks with real people. I'm your host, Shanae, and I'm here with Dudley and Jade. Bethany decided to ditch us for her birthday celebrations, so we just wanted to tell her happy birthday and enjoy your day. However, on a sad note, our host, Anispa, has left us and went on to pursue other endeavors. She will be missed, and we wish her nothing but the best in her future endeavors. Okay, so today we're tackling some things that are ongoing in the news. And first, we're going to start with the Bahamas Union of Teachers. So we talked about this, I think, twice already on the show. And they were basically, the government were saying that they were going to give the teachers a bonus. I said it was a bonus or a raise that I remember. The amount wasn't specified. But many teachers took to social media underneath a post that was made by, I think, Eyewitness News. And they were saying that what they were proposing, it was basically pennies. And the government said that this would only happen if they meet their fiscal goals. So basically, the negotiations have dragged on, and there hasn't been any resolution. The Bahamas Union of Teacher President, I think her name is Belinda Wilson, said that the union had rejected the proposal, and she asked for them to send them a sensible proposal, basically. And she said that they have received an unacceptable retention bonus proposal from the government about 3 months ago. And she was only invited this week to a meeting to discuss a bonus. But the Bahamas Union of Teachers, and I think the BNU, which is the Bahamas Nurses Union, have threatened industrial actions due to these agreements. And she said that they're hopeful that they will conclude. So this is Burnett Evans. Burnett Evans, who was a member of the union, said that he doesn't think that there's going to be any kind of take it or leave it attitude from the government. However, he thinks that they're going to be transparent and that they will show representatives where the government is financially headed, and that he's optimistic about where the negotiations are headed. So what are you guys' thoughts on the 3 months going by and nothing being said about what's gonna happen with this industrial agreement and these so-called bonuses or raises that teachers and also nurses as well should receive?
You said that they should receive it, so it hasn't been confirmed if they're receiving it or not.
Well, they said it was a proposal that they sent to the Bahamas Union of Teachers. They said that if they were to make their financial goals, that they would go forth with this so-called bonus. However, it is alleged that the bonus was only $60. Or the raise, whatever it was. That is alleged. There isn't anything to confirm that it has been put in writing, but that's what people were saying. So it's been 3 months. There hasn't been another proposal set. The president, Belinda Wilson, of the Bahamas Union of Teachers, said that she was only invited to discuss a bonus. So she said she was only called to a meeting in recent weeks to discuss a bonus, but nothing has been sent back to them in regards to the proposal of raising teachers' salaries. Even though that was plastered all over the media, I think maybe a month or two ago. So yeah, how do you guys feel about that? Do you think that the government isn't putting their money where their mouth is? Do you think that it's maybe taking advantage of teachers or throwing pennies at them? Like, what are you guys' thoughts on that? Because there was a lot of turmoil surrounding this topic.
I think by now they should have had like an update regarding the raise, if it's supposed to be happening. And then also too, I think that they should have had some kind of like conversation between the teachers, because you said it's nurses as well. Like, they should have communicated better with them to see where everyone thought a reasonable kind of pay would be. Because $60, like, not to sound bougie or anything, but it doesn't sound a lot, particularly with all the work that they do. So I don't think the government seems to be coming through with their promise, because by now, since that was a couple months ago, they should at least have said something to them, even if they decide not to do it anymore.
Teachers been underpaid for a long time, bro. Like, teachers have been, if you think about the amount of work that a teacher does, teachers have been underpaid for a long, long time. I mean, whether it's primary, secondary, college, teachers have been underpaid. So I can understand them really being like, you know, if you're going to give me a bonus, you're going to give me a bonus. If the bonus is $60, I got a question. What is $60 really? $60 is less than one adult dollar, because an adult dollar is $100. So by time as you think about going outside, you don't spend your bonus. And with the way that everything's going right now, you know, gas at all the stations are looking at a clean $7, just a couple of cents away from $7. So $60 is really not going to do you anything. So the fact that they're fighting for a better bonus makes a lot of sense, because like I said, if you actually sit down and think about what a teacher does, and you think about how much expense it is for them, because it's not like all the decorations and stuff that you see in a teacher's classroom, they don't get money to get those decorations, to get that set up. My sister's been a teacher for a long time, and when she was teaching first grade in the government system, every year she had to buy those things. She had to buy all the little ABCs, and she had to, wherever she could save money by making it herself, she had to do that. So it's not like they get a lot of assistance in the first place. And then to add on top of that, you're making the nurses upset. And the nurses and the doctors have been clamoring for being paid their worth from since before the pandemic, really. So the idea that they would join for, I'm surprised really that more unions haven't joined forces to, you know, talk about like demand bonuses or raises in pay. Because a lot of people are hurting. Inflation is estimated to be at over 8% right now. So yeah, a couple of cents, like giving me 10 more cents for my job, for the work that I do, ain't really gonna soften the blow, my boy.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, I feel as though there should have been some update, even if you say, okay, well, we're still waiting on X, Y, and Z, or we want to see if we meet these fiscal goals for this quarter, like some type of communication, because I know that this government said that, you know, they wanted transparency, they wanted accountability, and I would hope that transparency, that communication will come along with that, because if you want to be transparent, you wouldn't leave people in the dark.
Every government said, the menace government talked about accountability and transparency. Accountability and transparency are two of the biggest red flags to hear from the Bahamian government running, because it's like, you all say this, like you all say this every 5 years, and when they win, and whichever side of the red or yellow coin wins, they go, we are aiming for accountability and transparency, yet we still don't have the Freedom of Information Act going on here that everybody still promises, but that's neither here nor there.
Yes, very true. I agree that it is a red flag. But I mean, it seems as though, let me say it seems as though this government was attempting, even if they are not being completely transparent, they were forthcoming with quite a few things. So you can't be half-stepping. You have to be, you got to take it there, you know? So I feel like teachers deserve a raise, a reasonable raise, not $60, because in this day and age, yeah, $60 is more than they had, because, you know, behemoths like to say, oh, well, they ain't at the $60 before. Okay, but what is $60? $60 can't even put gas in the car for a week, no more.
That's why I said I think it would have been more. I mean, you don't want persons to go overboard and saying, because if you could give them more money, they'll try to go up. But They should have had a conversation, at least with the teachers union, to think of a reasonable bonus that they could give these persons. And I think they had efforts of making it possible, but like you said, if plans had changed, they could have at least updated them to say something, because it looks very bad that it's months later and nothing has been done or said.
It's still wild that they canned these people, honestly, in the year, in the 2022nd year of our Lord, and said, hey, we're going to give you guys an extra $60 for the job that you do.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Yes, allegedly.
Allegedly? Sorry. I feel that way. Allegedly.
Imagine your boss comes to you and just says, hey, so I'm going to give you an extra $60 for the incredible job that you've been doing at work over this pay period. It's like, bro, I just saw this person say that for their car to get, their car takes like 15 gallons of gas to go to full. It cost them $110. It's like, bro, the whole $60 is gone. Man, that's crazy. Y'all want $60 for what you do?
At least. Okay, oh yeah. So previously we talked about, I think it was either last episode or episode before last, we were talking about the Lincoln Bain situation where he went to an area that had been deforested, basically a pine forest area that all the trees were cut down. And he was blaming illegal immigrants, specifically Haitian nationals, for clearing down this area. So new information has surfaced. A charcoal manufacturer says that Bahamians are fully responsible for the illegal harvesting of these pine trees. And he said that the crown land in southern New Providence, according to a Bahamian charcoal manufacturer and farmer of 30 years, stated that Haitians may have done this, I think he said about 30 years ago, but in recent times it has been Bahamians removing the trees, well, cutting them down at least, and the Haitians would drag them away but not actually cut them down themselves. And this is what I was talking about in the previous episode when I was saying we should be careful, especially as a politician, who you're accusing of doing something like that. Because see, he went out there and he said that, didn't have proof, and then here comes this man who has been witnessing this, saying that, hey, it actually wasn't them, it was Bahamians. And then Wayne Monroe came and made a statement also saying that it was Bahamians doing this activity, and they're trying to create a group of people who would be called forest rangers, I guess, who would patrol the area. Don't laugh. This is serious.
The forest rangers
to patrol the area and to ensure that these illegal activities will not be occurring. Because obviously, if it's a pine forest and it's protected, or even if it isn't protected, it's just illegal to just go down and cut down a bunch of trees. Like you can't do that. So they'll have these rangers to ensure that this doesn't continue to occur, because this is crown land that these people are devastating.
The Bahamian Forest Rangers stopping illegal burning of pine forests, and also on the lookout for the legendary Yogi Bear.
So what are you guys' thoughts on one, Lincoln Bain's premature conclusions? What are your thoughts on the forest rangers? Do you think that that is going to be an effective way to handle the situation? And I guess, what should you think about it on the whole? I mean,
so let me just start by saying, I believe that one of the easiest and cheapest things to do as a politician is to see a problem that doesn't have a lot of evidence and automatically blame it on Haitians, because the Bahamian people have this. I mean, they will deny it until their last breath. But there's a serious xenophobic mindset towards Haitians. And some people will come and say, but they do so much wrong and illegally come here and this, that, and the next. Well, apparently they was burning down pine forests until two people came behind us and said, no, it was actually the Hemis. So jumping to conclusions, as a politician who's trying to, you know, build support, build rapport with people, and blaming immigrants for it is like this the quickest way to gain support. I still think that it was wild that he decided to shoot off his gun. Even if his gun was legal, it's still crazy that he decided to just lick off a couple shots, you know, in the air, randomly surrounded by the people recording him. But other than that, the idea that, you know, Bahamians are the ones doing it, what we need that much coal for, bro? Like, I understand some people grilling, but I don't think the people who out here grilling and trying to make a living by selling grilled food is the same people going out there slashing and burning down whole sections of a forest for no reason. This just seems like a string of weird things that has been happening. Like, I don't know if you saw it, but there was reports in the States about farms suddenly just being burnt down, being for no reason. A bunch of cattle had died and nobody could tell you why. So this is like a series of weird stuff. Like, now that all of that crown land has been deforested, what's going to happen? Are we going to replant the pine trees? Are we going to try and recreate the forest? Will it be sold off for people to build homes? Like, now that we know that there's a problem, that there are serial arsonists out there burning down forests for whatever reason, what are we, like, other than creating the Rangers? Because the Rangers, as much as I make fun of the name, it probably was never seen as necessary until now. But what are the Rangers, like, other than just implementing the forest rangers to stop these activities, what are we going to do to restore the forest?
That's a very good question, because Environment Minister Vaughn Miller, in the statements that he made, basically the only thing that he said to help manage our resources would be to hire more rangers. And he said that they will be trained as law enforcement officers. They'll work with Bowen to enforce any regulation infraction and stop the exploitation of our forest resources. They will conduct data collection during patrols to ensure the success of monitoring efforts, as well as forest management duties in our forest protected areas and
Bahamas. So essentially, we're going to have the Royal Bahamas Forest Rangers, and we're going to have a whole promotion system that is similar to both the police force and the defense force and customs and immigration, so that we can have another arm of law enforcement with ranks and people at higher positions that are supposed to be doing X. And then when we find out that there's cause of corruption, And they're actually doing why, we're going to be there like, oh no, who could have seen this coming? This is the plan. You know, they say that when you do the same thing over and over and you expect a different result, that is the definition of insanity. Yep. I understood that we might not have been the most, we might have a problem with mental health in this country, but I didn't know that the immediate answer was yes, most of us are actually insane.
Yep. I don't think there's anything wrong with having rangers. However, there in that statement, I felt that maybe there should have been something to say, okay, because some of the plants that were moved illegally were, I think, the silver top, and it was another one. And obviously these are significant to our country. So I think maybe we should have said, okay, and we'll start efforts with environmentalist groups such as the Bahamas National Trust or some other group to help start an initiative to start maybe planting some of these trees back, or some of something of that sort, because obviously you don't want them cut down. We should put something back there, I think.
They really are planning to get rangers. Did they say, Like, I'm just so interested in this part. Did they say what are the requirements for, like, the Rangers, or they just gathering anybody who's interested?
Well, I assume it's going to be similar to, like, Debbie said, to the Defense Force and the Police Force. Well, the Police Force. The Police Force vetting process, because they said that they would be law enforcement officers, but I mean, still be a part of the police. So whatever requirements it is for the police, I'm assuming it's going to be either the same or similar to some degree.
So are they law enforcement officers in the same way that the COVID ambassadors are law enforcement officers? Or
I assume so, but I
because
that's a good question, Dudley.
When was the last time you saw an actual COVID ambassador? I've seen their cars and then regular police hop out the car. So when was the last time anybody has seen a COVID ambassador? No, because I mean, we dedicated money, quote unquote, time, training, and definitely vehicles to making that quote unquote unit exist. So is it going to be the same thing? As a matter of fact, how are the forest rangers going to survey the forest? Like, because you can't just have a car driving through the forest. So what, they're going to like learn? Are we going to teach them how to be the greatest hunter tracking people in the land? Like, they're going to learn how to detect your footsteps from like 50 miles away? And the island ain't even that big. Why did I say that? But yeah, like what? this whole unit just got me with more questions than answers. Which is why, since we have none of these answers, which is why I'm going to say one of the things that they should put on top of their priority list is catching Yogi Bear.
But it also begs the question, at least for me, is how are you gonna? How much rangers do you have? You're gonna have to hire a lot of rangers, I feel, to cover the amount of forests, I guess, that we would have in various places. Because it ain't all in one spot. Like, how are you gonna designate that? How are you gonna decide how much rangers per area? And like you said, how are you gonna navigate this land? How I feel like it's very difficult. I mean, I feel like they're trying to do something. I feel like it's going to be a very difficult time for them to actually, like, discover who is doing this and how to stop them. Because if you're on one side of the forest and I'm in the middle cutting down the tree, how you can stop me? How fast do you get in the middle? I can take the tree and go on.
Why are we having forest rangers? Like, how big is the forest? I'm not aware. I would like to know how big are the forests really. And if we have forest rangers, why don't we have, like, marsh rangers that, you know, exist in the swamplands and stuff, since we have, like in Andres alone, you could make a killing off of having having marsh rangers. You could make a bunch of money off of having people trained on doing that. So, I mean, well, you know what? The forest rangers are happening, and when we hear from the, from whatever the highest position in the forest rangers are, they'll know what their, you know, what their plans are to keep our pine forest safe from people who chop it down and from Yogi Bear.
Wowzers. But yeah, I guess this begs a lot of questions. I feel a lot more questions than answers, in my opinion. So, I don't know if you guys saw, speaking of forest, I don't know if, and Crown Land, I don't know if you guys saw the story with the lady who's living on a bus on Crown Land. So, there was a lot of controversy around this. Apparently, I've actually seen this van, because I think she's been living there for a while. And I'm pretty sure I saw this van service on social media a couple of months ago.
Apparently she's been living there for a couple of years.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I've seen this before because I remember people were posting it all over Facebook saying, oh, this is an eyesore and how she could live on this thing. And originally they were saying that she was a Haitian national and that she was an illegal immigrant.
And then she turned out to be a Bahamian. Look at God.
Yeah, and she turned out to actually be a Bahamian. And basically, she was sharing her hardships on about her life, and I didn't really watch too much of it. Basically, she had a rough time, so she decided to put the money, the little money that she had, to build her home, to convert her home into a school bus home, which we call a tiny home, which, as we can see all over the world, is becoming a trend. However, I think the problem is the fact that it's on her land. She is apparently living on Crown land. So there's been a lot of issues with that. I feel as though we should get her some assistance somehow.
Now, there's been a lot of legal gymnastics with that situation that have tickled me to no end, but I'll let Jade go first.
I was going to say, because Janae asked about assistance, since then, I think it was the Minister of National Security, name or no, he had reached out to her, and he had offered her to go to social services to get assistance. Now, has she taken up the help? We can't confirm that, but he did offer her to go to social services to get the necessary steps to try to make her life better. But like you said, I think she's been there a while, so maybe she's happy there, but the issue is that isn't her land. I don't know how she even happens to get on that piece of property in the first place, but it is a big thing.
So obviously, I think we can safely say that she met the bus there. She didn't carry the school bus to that piece of property. So how did the bus get there? First question. Anyway, moving on from that. Social services. She said that I'm going to preface this with saying I believe, because it has been a minute since I've seen the video. But she said that I believe she's gone to social services already. Even if she hasn't, social services ain't gonna give her a house. So that's the first. That's like the first thing. And I don't think anybody can reasonably say that if I live in a giant vehicle that I am happy to be here, I'm just making it work. Humans are the most adaptable creatures on the planet. We tend to make a lot of situations just work. You could imagine her living in a bus, in a hot bus, in the middle of summer in Nassau. Her house must be getting to like 100 degrees easy. So it probably ain't comfortable. And I think one of the weird things that I found interesting was like, apparently she was planning on adding a little bathroom to the bus. And I was like, I don't know how this is going to work, but that seems like a feat of engineering that needs to be studied more so than discouraged.
But Dudley, a lot of people actually move into school buses and convert them into homes because they show it inside of it. And actually, I wanted to do that at one point. So there are quite a lot of people who want to do that. First of all, Dudley. It's workable, it's doable, and apparently like the material that it's made from is pretty durable. So a lot of people convert them.
No, school buses are yellow school buses are very durable pieces of machinery. But I mean, even if people like, I'm sure most of the people that take school buses and convert them into homes are like you. That's something that they want to do. She doesn't, at no point during the interview did she indicate that this is something that she wants to do. It's something that she's done out of necessity. It's not like I'm sure that a lot of the people that converted their homes into buses, I mean, converted their buses into homes, my bad, did not start out with the idea of, I'm going to move into this bus and I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to stay here for so long. Like, moving into a trailer and saying I'm going to make this trailer my permanent home, or moving into an RV and saying I'm going to make this RV my permanent home, that's one thing. But that bus can't drive. Like, the bus is there. And then to say like, oh, she's on the Crown line and you're gonna make her to move. So you're going to take her from one perilous situation into an even more perilous situation, because now she's gonna be homeless, because you can't tell me that social services are going to set this woman up with a home. Like, we barely, services that's supposed to give us money barely give us money. So a home is a little bit of a stretch. Anyway, that's the government to do.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you basically taking it from one bad situation and putting it in a completely different one. And the only way to literally solve a problem is to give us some place to live. And like you said, Dudley, we don't see that happening. It sucks, but that's where she's at. And I'm hoping that maybe an organization, a nonprofit, maybe can reach out and get a facilitator for a few months or something of the sort. Because I can't imagine how she feels and what she's going through. One, because she's already in a bad situation and she found something that could work for her. And now she's going to be uprooted again because she's on the crown land. So, yeah. Okay, so on a positive note, three Bahamians are to receive International Cultural Day Icon Awards. And this occurred this week, June 25th, in the area of culture. Angelique McKay will be honored for her tireless work in promoting Bahamian culture, especially Junknu. And athlete Kashawn Strawn will be honored for his specialty in javelin. And Reverend C.B. Moss will be honored for his long-standing service in community activism. So that's great that Bahamians are going to be recognized for their talents and for promoting Bahamian culture and just being Bahamian. All in all, I think that is amazing. So I just wanted to share that. And then I have another story that I wanted to share. So the government is looking to slash the food import bill by 25% by 2025. So the Prime Minister said that we are investing $100 million into agriculture to ensure that the Bahamas takes steps towards decreasing its reliance on food input. And he said that they are also providing $500,000 in grants to farmers and an additional $1 million in funding to secure broilers and to support livestock farming, which is great. We've been saying for decades that we should be at least producing some of our food and that governments needed to invest more into food security and farming. And I think it was the previous government that implemented the Bamsi school thing, or at least helped it in some way, I believe. So I think this is great. I hope they stick to it. And basically this is, I guess, their a way to try and get the cost of living down, because if you're importing something, it's going to be more expensive than if you actually grow it here. I don't know if anyone's ever been to like the farmers markets. The prices aren't bad at all, actually. And you're getting stuff that's grown locally. Yeah.
Bamsi was before Minister's time. That was
the creation of it. I mean, they created a program of some sort to help students go there for agriculture, if I remember correctly. If it wasn't Minister, it was the previous administration.
I'm pretty sure like that was a part of the whole thing. It's like, we made this thing and then we're going to give you a pipeline into it. I could be wrong, but I mean,
I'm guessing.
Lessening our food import is a very amazing but not really revolutionary idea. Some people who listen to this show may be old enough to remember that there was once upon a time when the Bahamas used to produce so much pineapples in Eleuthera. We used to export those. We used to make so much tomatoes. We used to export those. I don't know why specifically tomatoes. I don't know what about, because we always get told about there's something with our soil that makes it so difficult for agriculture to happen. But for whatever reason, pineapples and tomatoes was popping at one point. So, I mean, it's like we had a solution to the problem, then we made a problem, and now we're going back in time to solve the problem. It's cool, don't get me wrong. I understand that I always sound so pessimistic about things, but it's cool, well, or cynical, whichever one you want to say. And I mean, it's cool, it's all right, but I just feel as though, and I feel as though a lot of Bahamians would agree with me on this. This should have never really been a problem in the first place. We should have never gotten to a point where we became so reliant on foreign entities to give us food that, you know, it drove up the cost of living so much. You know, if we're going to go back to a time where that's not really a problem, that's cool with me.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you, Dudley, in terms of this is something that could have been solved or, matter of fact, not created in the first place. I remember when I was in, I think maybe grade 6, we went on a field trip and we visited a few islands and we visited farms. And like, they were really large farms and it was also a documentary and things that were put out. I can't remember her name, but I believe she's like a non-traditional journalist, meaning that she doesn't work for traditional companies, but she creates her own content on the internet and she like goes on these, does these like documentaries. I really can't remember her name. She did a documentary on like farming and what was happening in Andres and how they had to throw away their crops because nobody was buying and like how the government wasn't supporting them and stuff like that. I really wish I could remember the name, but I really can't at this current juncture. But yeah, like this is something that could have been avoided. We should have been pouring into our country in terms of creating resources for future generations and pouring into that instead of getting subpar food from other places. It literally makes no sense. But hey, that's this country for you, I guess. So I have one more thing I wanted to mention. NIB is supposed to help the Bahamians. They say they run out of money and they ain't gonna be sustainable. I probably after the 2-year stint of, you know, COVID and unemployment and so on, they say they're gonna raise their prices by like 2% or something like that.
1.5% to 2%.
Yeah, they're gonna raise their contributions 1.5% to 2% so that it could stay sustainable and basically stay in existence. Now there are a lot of mixed reviews on this. A lot of people were upset, but I mean, I don't know how to feel about it. I'm kind of on the fence. I'm kind of like, I understand why you're upset. But then at the same time, it's just like, this is something that is going to hopefully benefit you in the long run. Hopefully. But a lot of people are like, child, you might as well get a retirement plan anyway because NIB ain't going to help you much. And so I get both sides of the spectrum of why people are bothered by it and why people are like, well, I got to pay it anyway.
I mean, NIB, one of the more interesting existing things in the country. I haven't really done my due diligence on reading up on the NIB functions. You know, we just have this idea that, as you say, when things go south for the country, aka for the countrymen, more so than the government of the country, then we're supposed to look at NIB and be like, hey, we've been paying you all a bunch of money. Like every working adult has been making contributions to this. So it's only fair that, you know, we get some of that money back because things feel tough. And when COVID started, boy, did we figure out how quickly that was good, how good of an idea that was. Because you had people saying, oh, NIB ain't giving my money yet. I done been on that line for 3 hours, for 3 days. Obviously, those people never went to UB because if they had, they would have had the leg strength to do that. But anyway, point aside, I mean, the idea that I believe that at some point, as with all things, the rate at which you contribute to NIB, however, comma, I feel as though now is not the appropriate time to mention it. Because it's one thing to say, well, they're prepping the peoples for for the eventual happening. That's fine. But you gotta understand that the timing of announcements plays a very big part in how it's received, right? So it's like the country is getting more and more expensive by the day. And then they said, hey, y'all better get ready because before summer over, gas gonna be at $8. And everybody was looking at that like, hey, whoa, what are you talking about, sir? And everybody kicked up the big bus. It's really the timing of the announcement. Now, I feel as though the fact that we have a minimum wage that isn't the price, inflation is what it is. Everything is seemingly more expensive. To add on to that, the fact that you're going to be the contribution to a government organization that comes out of your pay, no matter what, is going to increase. And most people don't see the benefits of that pay going there because they either don't go to, they don't qualify to go to NIB for assistance, or, you know, some people don't even get their pension properly. It's like, why would you say this now? Why now? Is it like, this is projected that the country is going to be doing so bad for so long that you figured you might as well say it now, or like what? Because, I mean, you didn't want to announce how minimum wage going to increase before you wanted to tell me that you're going to be taking more of my money away from my paycheck every time I get paid. Come on, that hurt me.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So for those of you that are not tired of us talking about government and government entities, can I interest you in the stories of BPL? So for those of you that did not know, the BPL is going to is saying that they're going to increase the amount of fuel charges within the next month or two. This was reported on the 27th. So this was reported on Monday, which means that come July or August, your electricity bill is going to be going up. It goes on to say, it said customers who average monthly consumption is 250 kilowatts will see a raise of about $8 in their monthly light bill. And customers whose consumption is 600 kilowatts will see an increase of about $19 per month. So the statement was later recalled, and Prime Minister Philip Davis promised that his administration would address the issue. Lord knows that our people could least afford to have more taxes or more costs visited upon their backs, said Davis, who was out of the country at the time. My government will do all in its power to see how we can avert raising the cost of electricity on our people. As soon as I embark to the Bahamas, we'll be sitting down to brainstorm and see how we can best do that. My problem with this whole idea of BPL raising costs is that for whatever reason, it always seems to be this promise that we're going to see a lower electricity bill, or at some point the Bahamian people won't even be paying for electricity. That's how good the country gonna get to at some point. And then without fail, it just turns around and it's like, well, in the meantime, while we're figuring all of that out, the cost of light going up. So how do you guys feel about another utility bill rising during these great times we live in?
I mean, it feels like we're just getting hit from left, right, up, down. But at the same time, it's like I kind of expected it because fuel prices are rising. And what does BPL use? Fossil fuels. So I expected it to go up, but it's just like, you know, everything is just all haywire and out of whack. And like you said, we've been promised lower electricity bills, hopefully solar, to the point where we don't have to pay. But I honestly don't foresee that happening because it's just like, I feel like these big companies making money off this stuff. Why would they willingly put down their money makers for more sustainable power? Like, I don't see it happening anytime soon, unless we absolutely have to, unless the world is like literally about to explode, because you know that's how humans go. But I'm not surprised at all, actually.
It's funny that you would mention renewable energy, aka solar energy, because there's another story that talking about that, saying that the Bahamas' commitment to generating 30% of its renewable energy by 2030 is attainable, but will require a, quote, bit more aggressive, unquote, work over the next 8 years, according to the CEO of BPL, Siobhan Cambridge. Said that there is about 10 to 15 megawatts of renewable energy in the Bahamas, which I believe, I'm not saying that he's wrong. I'm just confused on how there's only 10 to 15 megawatts of renewable energy when the sun be sunning every single day. Even when it rained, the sun's still there. So, you know, he went on, he, Siobhan Cambridge, sorry, went on to say, when we look at what our national profile looks like, I estimate that you need somewhere around a total of about 80 to 90 megawatts of renewables out there to say that you're around that 30% mark. It's attainable, but we're going to have to get a little bit more aggressive if we're going to get there by 2030, and that's the reality of it. Where we are right now has been primarily done with residential and small commercial solar. To get to 2030, we're going to need to see utility scale solar in some appreciable form. So solar energy is the main idea, which, you know, as I said, the sun be sunning every single day. But, you know, apparently it's going to take us like 8 years to generate that much power, unless even if we go at this conversion aggressively. So how are you feeling? How does that make you feel that with as much sun as it is on a daily basis, it's gonna take us 8 years to reach that goal?
Yeah, I just don't understand. Like you said, the sun be sunning every day. So what's really going on?
Every day, people are at risk of getting a sunstroke. But I believe the main thing is that outside of just, you know, he does go on to say that providing energy to some of the outer islands, it costs more to provide energy than they make back in revenue. But my thing is, if we were really looking at converting to renewable energy, then we should have been had a solar panel farm in the works from like when solar panels was becoming popular, because over time they just getting more and more expensive to get and getting cheaper. So
thank you guys for tuning into another episode of Candid. We had a great conversation today, talking about important issues and things that have been transpiring in our country. You can follow us on Facebook at Candid242. We are also on Instagram, and you can listen to our episodes that have already aired on The Guardian, Spotify, or on our Acast, and our link is on our Facebook page. And you can also follow us for updates. So see you next week. Keep it real, Bahamas.